Welcome to the Clemson Drone Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burgett from Clemson University. Join me as I dive into the world of drone technology and explore its impact through the eyes of industry leaders. Hear how drone technology directly supports public agencies, private companies, and entrepreneurs from those leading the innovation. If you're a seasoned UAS program manager or just getting into the game, this is a place to learn from the best to help your program soar to new heights. Make sure you subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss a single episode of the Clemson Drone Podcast. At Clemson Drone, the sky is not the limit, it's just the beginning. Hello, team. Great to have you back for another episode of the Clemson Drone Podcast. I am Joe Burgett with Clemson University, and I'm thrilled to share another conversation with you. I have Eric Harkins, the founder and CEO of Back 40 Aerial Solutions, on the line. Back 40 is a South Carolina-based company that focuses on providing drone solutions in the LiDAR, photogrammetry, forest resource management, asset inspections, and all things drones. I've gotten to know Eric over the past couple of years through his support of SkyDuck and just running in similar circles. And I can tell you firsthand that he is an expert in many things drone-related, but especially in LiDAR, which I'm excited to talk through with him. So, Eric, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Joe. I'm glad to be here. Good to catch up with you.
Yeah. All right, good deal. So let's go ahead and get started here. Before we get into the details of your company and how you're using drones, can you give us a little bit about yourself? Where'd you grow up? What were you doing before you got into drones?
I grew up here in South Carolina. I went to the University of South Carolina, was studying history, and then I wasn't doing so hot with my scores, so I had to take some summer classes, and one of those was a GIS class. And so that gave me my first exposure to maps. I always was very directionally gifted, I guess you could say. I didn't get lost very easily. So
sure.
To me, the GIS was like a very eye-opening situation. Then I transferred from there to Clemson, and I did forest resource management, which GIS was still a large part of that. And there was a lot of remote sensing, obviously, in the forestry, which kind of piqued my interest there, too. As life went on, I graduated. I did policy. I did a GIS job for the city of Columbia. I've done some IT for Westinghouse and Aflac, just kind of an eclectic background. And so when I was still working at Westinghouse, I saw that there was, you know, drones coming up. The EB had been launched. I saw some of the 3D models came out of that. And I was like, wow, man, this is all that GIS field work I was doing for the city. I could have been doing half of that with drones. I gotta learn more about that. And so that drew me in and kind of set me on the path that I'm on now.
Okay. Awesome. And again, you own your own company. You're an entrepreneur, and we're going to talk a bit more about that. But you started Back 40 in 2016. And as you know, Part 107 was released in 2016. Well, there wasn't a lot of drone operations going on before that. What made you so confident that this was a field that was going to grow rapidly and then, you know, so much that you invested the time and effort and all the energy that goes into starting your own company around the drone space?
I would say I just kind of caught the bug. You know, at the time I was so enamored with what the potential was. I was doing my Part 333. Obviously they replaced that requirement for some with Part 107. And so I just jumped right into that and was able to complete that and get started. I think I got mine in January of 2017. And like a lot of people, it was kind of a part-time thing with a full-time vision.
Right.
And so I still had to work a full-time job for several years while I was trying to, you know, generate enough interest in what we were doing. You know, I think the hardest part about starting was that I first had to educate myself, and then I had to educate the customer, and then I had to sell the customer. And so in the early days, it was really easy doing photo video. Everybody wanted photo video. Drone photo video was the easy thing. But the mapping is really what intrigued me. And so I had to do a bit of that, or the photo video, right, before I could get my now customers to really buy into the potential and the accuracy of what drones could provide them. So
yeah, that makes a ton of sense. A couple of things I got from that, and we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, advice that you might give entrepreneurs down the line. But I love the phrase, you know, starting part time with a full time vision. I mean, that I get that resonates well. And I also hear that the challenge that you have about, you know the product and you know the accuracy of the product, but you sometimes have to educate clients on what it is, the value. I mean, you know, that it's not just a fluff piece and this is, you know, some YouTube video, but the accuracy is there and it can save people time, money, safety aspects, all that kind of good stuff. So I love that side. So let's kind of go into a little bit more of the details here. So the audience that we have on the that's listening, we're going to have a pretty wide background. We're going to have folks in, you know, municipalities, small companies, law enforcement, you know, a wide range there. But I do want to dive into photogrammetry and LiDAR with you. So just so that we're all on the same page, can you give us kind of a quick, you know, and I know it'll be hard to kind of keep it relatively short, but a high level summary of what photogrammetry is and what LiDAR is through the lens of drone tech.
So the two technologies are basically separated into a passive and an active sensor. LiDAR being active because it generates a pulse and then we receive the pulse back. We tie that into the position and the IMU rotation of the LiDAR at the time to basically recreate that accuracy after the fact. But it is an active sensor, whereas photogrammetry is a passive technology where we're receiving the reflected light from the sun on surfaces, right? And it's coming into the camera. And then the camera is recording a position and then it's trying to recreate what it saw on the ground, you know, from all of these disparate pictures. But, you know, obviously it has their locations as well. So it's kind of a reverse aerial triangulation of, hey, this is where all these pictures are. And we think that, you know, matching these positions with each other, we can determine a triangulation of an object on the ground. The other thing that is a real differential factor between the two is that photogrammetry, again, just being a passive, it doesn't penetrate vegetation very well. Whereas LiDAR being an active sensor, you know, you have things that are a single all the way up to a 5 or higher return. Usually on a UAS, you know, the highest you're going to get is a 5 return off of something like a Regal sensor. But usually triple is around where I like to sit. But the reason is those returns allow you to penetrate through some vegetation or some obstructions to get a reading beyond that initial object, whereas photogrammetry doesn't do that.
Gotcha. All right. So LiDAR, you got a sensor. It sends out a laser beam that can potentially get through, you know, vegetation. I mean, it's not going to go through a tree trunk.
Yeah,
right?
It's not X-ray here, right?
Right. But it'll go through, you know, some foliage and that kind of stuff, you know, tree canopy type of thing. And then it bounces back and hits the sensor on the drone and it positions where it's at. Photogrammetry on the other end is a camera, right? And it's a nice camera potentially. And it embeds in those images the GPS location of where the image was taken, and then software computes it. In some respects, though, the output, right? I guess there are some differences, but at the end of the day, it's a point cloud that you generate from both. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And also from photogrammetry, you can create the ortho imagery as well, which, you know, in terms of like my general LiDAR work, you know, we want both. You know, there's the density of a LiDAR point cloud can be higher, but a lot of times because of the colorization, the inherent colorized points of photogrammetry, it lends that more photorealistic view so that when you're working in a point cloud, it adds additional context. Whereas with LiDAR, again, you can colorize LiDAR, but sometimes that point density of the colorization isn't as photorealistic, right, as you'd see in photogrammetry. And so a lot of times when working with LiDAR, you'll still use a ortho mosaic as a layer to add context to your LiDAR data.
Gotcha. Now, I mean, you would kind of talk a little bit some of the pros and cons of LiDAR versus photogrammetry. I mean, the main one that you mentioned was LiDAR is able to go through some vegetation, you know, like, you know, some grass and actually get to the earth to be able to get that real terrain. But are there any other, maybe you can talk through on both sides. What are the pros and cons of LiDAR and photogrammetry, you know, cost and, you know, all the other things that kind of go into it?
I would say, you know, some of the pros are really, LiDAR can be used at any time of the day or night, right? It's because it's an active sensor, it doesn't require quality lighting conditions. You can execute the mission at the same parameters, you know, day or night, to get the same quality of data. The other thing is it's creating a true 3D reflection of what it's seeing, right? So we're doing some forest research and mensuration, which is just measurement of the forest. And the LiDAR allows us to pick up the full structure as it is, right? And whereas with photogrammetry, it's doing a best interpolation. And so another way to think of this is, I don't know, let's talk about a building, right? A building is a hard structure with hard edges. And in photogrammetry, you can get you can take a lot more pictures, right? At different angles to fill in those gaps.
Right.
But the workflow and the post-processing time involved with that is exponentially higher than LiDAR, right? If I wanted to scan a building for, let's say, a 3D model, right? I would just scan the building and I'm done. And then I can use my base file to process the trajectory. And I have a rectified point cloud in minutes generally. But whereas with photogrammetry, right. You have to go through, you have to add control. You have to ensure that if you're using RTK, that you've got high quality positioning on all of those pictures. Otherwise the software is going to do its best, right? There's various softwares mm-hmm. with various algorithms to recreate those objects. So there's differences for a reason, right? And there's also differences in cost along with that.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, photogrammetry is really good for modeling, right? You know, if you want to take photorealistic models, we have customers that are in the BIM space that, you know, maybe they have a presentation or they're trying to do a facade repair, you know, something like that. They want photogrammetry because they can add that realism to their marketing and their you know, the texture, I guess you could say, is there.
Yeah, that might be important to the client, right? Because if you're, let's just say you're a general contractor, you know, you don't necessarily, a point cloud might be great, but it's what's much better is if you have a model of a building and you can use that to point to, hey, deficiency here or leaking energy here or whatever, and you can communicate that. Now, you mentioned cost, and I think a lot of the folks on the call will be more familiar with the cost of photogrammetry. You can get a good commercial drone with a camera, we'll say $3,500. You can get a subscription to a product that will produce a model, we'll call it $300 a month. What are we looking at when we're talking about LiDAR?
The way that I've done LiDAR is I kind of look for things that have perpetual license on the software side. Right. Because if I'm going to learn the software and learn the workflow, I want that one time cost to mm-hmm. amortize beyond. Right. And sure. So, you know, on the LiDAR end, you know, you have the DJI products, the L1, L2 that are out now that are kind of on the lower end. And then you really can work your way up from there to kind of a mid grade sensor, which these days is sitting around 35, 40 grand mm-hmm. all the way up to, there's still, you know, high end units for several hundred thousand dollars.
Right.
That have a 200 megapixel phase one and a Regal Vux 240 on it. So there's it still runs the gamut of what's out there. But I would say in terms of what we've found to be effective for our clients, you know, something along the lines of having at least triple return. And I like the 32 laser scanners, you know, that are the traditional puck. But they aren't the right mm-hmm. application for everything either. DJI has the Avata, or excuse me, not the Avata, the Avia, that has this oscilloscope pattern to it, which adds, you know, context. It degrades the accuracy, but it adds additional context in different angles and different goals that you'd be using for modeling or surveying.
Right, right. Well, so let me kind of switch, stay in the same veins, but move on to a different topic here. So I personally get a lot of questions about ground control points and RTK. And for those of you guys who may not be familiar with it, ground control points or GCPs, these are just physical targets that are on the ground that a surveyor or somebody has located. So there's a three-dimensional coordinate system that is there. And then for photogrammetry, you know, you fly the drone and you capture images of your site, and those images will include the GCPs. And when you put that into software, you can say, okay, software, by goodness, I know that point in that image of that, where that GCP is located, I know the coordinates for that. And those are like pins in the model, and they can be stretched and positioned so that you can increase the relative and absolute accuracy. That's GCPs. And RTK stands for real-time kinematic, and it's a different process where basically it's kind of like souping up your GPS, right? You got a GPS on your drone, it's plus or minus a few feet, whatever it happens to be, because of just natural errors. You know, there's atmospheric errors, there's, you know, whatever it happens to be. And RTK in real time will beam corrections to your drone and say, you know, here's the corrective values. And so the drone knows where it's at and can embed those positions onto the metadata within the images. Now, the reason I bring this up is because in yesteryear, those were, especially RTK, that's expensive equipment, hard to get, you know, whatever. But now with DJI and their M3 and Drone Deploy and other hardware and software providers, they've made this RTK super accessible. You know, it's I want to say it's almost more accessible than the knowledge is behind it catching up. So I wanted to chat with you a little about that. You know, what are your thoughts about RTK and GCPs? Do RTK replace GCPs? What are your thoughts on those two topics?
I guess we'll just talk about GCPs at large, right? When using photogrammetry, your imagery is based on a ground sampling distance, right? And so your ground sampling distance is basically your resolution. And the higher you fly, the lower that resolution is. And so that also needs to determine the size of your target. So if you're flying something, let's say 200 feet, using a 1x1 target should be sufficient. You can spot the center of that, right? But maybe if you're flying a little higher at, 350, 400, maybe you're just doing a regular ortho, but you still want it aligned in reference correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a 2x2 target is more appropriate, right? So that you can increase the visibility at that higher altitude. So in my company, we use 2x2 targets for the most part. We have big metal ones that are, I'm going to shout out to customdronepads.com. I've been buying stuff from them for probably 5 years. We created a custom design. They have several types that you can do, but we use this Rigibond. So it has aluminum with rubber sandwiched between the two. And so these things are tough. I have only ever had them damaged when I had heavy construction equipment run them over. And even depending on how they hit it, I was able to straighten them back out. But that's kind of part of it. And I really want to hit on that because in the early days, we were using vinyl targets. And if you're putting that on grass, you're putting that on, basically anything that's not a flat surface, the grasses especially, right? If you beat the grass down and you leave it there and you try to come back and fly it another day, the grass is going to stand up overnight, right? And so now the surface of that target is uneven. And so what you're trying to pick out as an actual vertical piece of the point cloud, and at least in photogrammetry, is uneven. Right?
So I've seen it be reflective too. Like if you get some of that shiny and it's kind of mirrored, and if it's a bright sunny day, all you can see is the bright sun and you can't find the middle. It's all washed out.
I've definitely, that's camera settings for sure. But in LiDAR, you don't necessarily have that problem. In LiDAR, you're using an intensity view to see that. And so the black, we can kind of touch on that too. Black absorbs light, right? We know that, and white reflects it much more efficiently. So that's really what's happening when you're using these GCPs, or at least black and white GCPs in LiDAR. The intensity reflectance is how you see that differential and can pick out that center. So other things like water, depending on the sensor, I'll give you an example. We were doing work in Tennessee this past week. Oh gosh, I'm gonna get way off topic here. I want to stay on topic.
Well, let me dive in here with a kind of a quick question though. So, I mean, with RTK, so get you on the GCPs, and I think we're on agreement there, but I mean, you have some great equipment, and I know you have RTK, but you're still using GCPs. And so you're not of the mind that RTK replaces GCPs.
I'm not, because you have to validate your work. I mean, if you're just saying, hey, okay, 6-inch vertical is close enough, you know, if you don't really care about the accuracy, and a lot of my clients are licensed surveyors, right? So they have to meet state standards and national standards for their work. And so if you don't have checks, how can you validate your assumption?
Right.
How do you say that my RTK was right and my data is right? You know,
So at a minimum checkpoints, even if you're not using ground control points to make your model, you gotta have some checkpoints out there.
In photogrammetry, yes, you could fly low enough with RTK and have enough point density in GSD to really create a very accurate model. But even if you you use GCPs and just use them as checkpoints, you know, that's still, you have to validate your data. And then at that point, if you see errors, well, guess what? Now you can reprocess them with the GCPs to reduce that error.
Right.
So
yeah, no, that makes tons of sense.
Yeah, I'm just still not of the school that RTK, no GCPs is something that I'm willing to pass to my clients.
Right. And I think you're in the majority there.
Yeah, we have to stand behind it, right? Like you have to legally be able to stand behind it. And let's all be honest, poop flows downhill. And if you're a drone service provider and a surveyor, you do jobs for a surveyor and you put him in a, you open up his liability.
Right.
You know, your credibility is damaged.
Right.
Pretty much, period.
Right. No. Your point is definitely well taken. And I think every time I talk to an expert, that is the opinion I get. And then I go to the internet and I see a blog, and it just, I just want to reinforce it. But in that, you know, you talk about reputation. So we're going to kind of wrap this up with kind of final question here. You're a successful entrepreneur with your company. And we have a nationwide audience here that's listening in. Folks may be listening and considering starting their own drone business. If one of those folks, again, could be a wide range, you know, in the surveying business, inspection, construction, I mean, there's a ton of different markets, but generically, as an entrepreneur, if one of those folks were to come up to you and say, "Hey, I'm looking to start a drone business," what kind of, you know, real tangible and practical advice would you give them about starting a business in the drone space?
So in terms of advice I'd hand off to folks, it's a business. It's still a business. You need to create a business plan. You need to have a target customer. You need to have a way to reach that customer. But most importantly, you need to know how you're solving a problem for that customer, right? If it's a marketing agency, do they have an in-house drone team? Do they have someone that they're using already? Are they looking for more of a production, right? I see a lot of people that start in this business as in the creative side and actually end up creating full-size production companies, right? Because they realize that the drone is just one tool in the bag. If you're into the construction world, you know, go with what you know. You know, if you know general contractors, or you've worked, like for me, right? I worked in GIS, I worked with maps, I worked with surveyors, and so I stuck with what I knew and what I could speak intelligently about. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for everybody, that's not the case. Right. You can find a second career in life, but education is really key.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also add that when approaching customers, you know, just say, "Hey, look, just be honest about where you're at. Like, hey, I'm not exactly sure how to do what you're asking me to do, but if you're willing to work with me, I'm willing to work with you."
Right.
You know, unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately for me, there was a customer last week that he had hired someone who overpromised what they could do, and they came out and they flew a site with LiDAR like 4 times, and they could never create the point cloud, and they didn't know how to reference into the control. They didn't know. They just rented a M350 and a L2 and said, "I'm on my way."
Mm-hmm.
And then unfortunately, you know, the customer couldn't get what he needed, and so he found me.
Right.
And now he's, you know, I'm kind of coaching him up on how he can use drones in other parts of his business too. So just be honest with your customers when you're approaching them. I think honesty is still always the best policy. You know, I would also say this, you get a lot of times where folks are new and they're very excitable about what the potential means to them to start a drone company. And then they'll call people like me and they'll expect me to just spill the beans on what I do. And you got to realize that your potential competition. And so if you're asking a value from someone else, you need to bring value to,
mm-hmm.
you know, "Hey, is there any way that I can work with you? You know, can I be a part of your team?" I get a lot of guys all the time. They're like, "Hey, I want to learn mapping and LiDAR and how to survey. How do I become a surveyor?" It's a lot steeper of a hill than you would expect.
Yeah.
But the first thing to do is to go to a surveyor and learn, spend a year or two working for them and actually learn surveying and the field principles.
Right.
And why things are done a certain way they are. You know, there's also other stuff out there. You know, if you want to get into like roof inspections, thermography, you know, going and taking a thermography class is going to help you really understand the science behind what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a concept out there that, you know, Elon Musk gets interviewed about a lot with first principles, right? Knowing the first principles. And so at least in my business, I seek first to learn the technology before I'm willing to sell it,
right?
As a service. And so I'm not interested in changing the wheel while I'm going down the highway.
Right.
And so, but the important part of that is once you learn the principles, maybe they're surveying principles, maybe they're photogrammetric principles, maybe they're LiDAR principles, then that opens you up when a customer says, "Hey, I want to do something different." Then you can apply. And that's where we've had a lot of success over time, is learning the first principles of what we do. And now we know where they can and can't be applied. You know, I'll give another example. I had a customer who said, "Hey, these guys can't come out and fly in the rain. They won't get the job done. We got to get this done this week. It's raining all week." And I said, you know, there may be some degrade in accuracy. You know, what are you looking for here? I'm looking for 6-inch. Okay, we can still do better than 6-inch vertical. I know that the M300 is, you know, waterproof, right? So we went out and still flew it in light rain and got the job done for him, whereas another person who didn't really understand the principles around what sensors could do had turned him down. And, you know, we made $15,000 off of going and doing those sites for him when somebody else wouldn't.
Gotcha.
And I know that's like a long arc, right? But it builds on itself as you go along. Again, business, being able to run it as a business, right? You got to understand budgeting. You got to understand your tax strategy. You got to understand business licenses. You know, there is more than just popping up with a drone and saying, I'm here, I can do it. The days of that are gone, where people are chasing you down for, just because you have a drone.
Gotcha. You know, and we got to have you back because, you know, we could probably spend a whole pod on just, you know, starting a business, but we do need to leave it here. So Eric, you know, this has been great having you on and sharing your insights. We'll make sure that we put Back 40 Aero Solutions website and contact information in the show notes, but thank you so much for being on and talking with us.
Awesome. Thank you, Joe. Glad to be here and look forward to it next time. We'll see you at Skyduck Conference. Okay.
Very good. Absolutely. And for everyone that's listening, thank you guys for tuning in. Look forward to putting out another one of these in the next couple of weeks. Until then, I'm Joe Berget with Clemson University. Take care. See you soon. Thanks for listening to the Clemson Drone Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Learn more about our online training offerings by going to clemsondrone.com. Thanks again. And remember, a Clemson drone, the sky's not the limit. It's just the beginning.